Proudly presented by Paul Everett's RV Country. This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and part two of our conversation with 92-year-old Lawson Sakai of Morgan Hill, California, a Purple Heart recipient and veteran of the 442nd Regimental Combat Team in Europe during World War II. We've heard about how he was nearly killed by a German artillery round during the famous rescue of the Lost Battalion in the Vosges Mountains in October 1944. And he told us it took him about 3 months to recover from his injuries before he would return to combat.
So from the time you rejoined the 442nd until the end of the war, where were you? What were you doing?
Well, in April, General Mark Clark from the 5th Army in Italy wanted the 442nd to come back to Italy. So we were shipped back quietly, and I think General Clark didn't want the Germans to know that we were coming back. So we were transported by truck at night a lot, and then when we got close to the front lines, we marched in at night and hid out during the daytime. I remember we marched at night. We didn't know where we were going, but there was a little village called Ozzano. And we moved into Ozzano. The next day, we could see out from the houses. Across the hill was Mount Fogorito, which was the anchor mountain of about six mountains, which they called the Gothic Line. And this is where the 5th Army had been trying to penetrate through that series of mountains to get to the Po Valley. Well, the 92nd Division was there, and I guess they were there over 5 months, and they've been trying to scale the mountain and getting shot down day after day. And after watching what was going on, we were told to strip down to the lightest weight, keep our canteens covered, ammo, weapon, that's it. Take everything else off, and quietly we're going to climb that mountain. You know, we're young kids. I've been back there twice, and I looked at that thing, and I said, I don't know how we could climb that thing, even in broad daylight, you know. I remember there was a 14-year-old Italian boy, Partizano, who knew all the, you know, they knew all the goat trails and everything, and he led the way. And I met Guido two or three times afterwards. He had a small restaurant motel in Massa. So we stayed there a couple times. And unfortunately, he's already passed away. But we had to hang on to each other. You couldn't see. It was the dark of night. And he had to be very quiet. My L Company was in the lead. And my friend Shig Kazuka from Watsonville was the third soldier at the peak. And he said everybody was crowding up there as close as they could get to the top. And there was an outcropping where they had waited. And at daybreak, they moved up, and there were two machine gunners sound asleep. That's how quiet they were.
Holy cow.
And they wiped them out and went up on top and started shooting at the Germans. And the Germans were either getting up, having breakfast, or, you know, just really not prepared for an assault. And the chase was on. They loaded up their trucks and just, you know, got out of there as fast as they could. And it broke the Gothic Line. And as Eric Saul, I don't know if you've ever met him, he's a historian. He says the 442nd broke through in 32 minutes. So from there, we chased the Germans up through the hillside, Massa, Carrara, on up the coast of Genoa. Then they moved into the Po Valley, and they got to a place called the Getty Airport in Brescia, and they surrendered. Then the war was over.
Climbing that peak, taking that spot, and then finding out that those machine guns are there. I bet you're glad you didn't make any noise on the way up, huh?
Well, you know, dead of night, you would think, you know, I don't know how quiet you can be, but
Because all it would have taken was one, right? I mean, one guy screwing up and everybody dies. So when you get that news, Germany surrendered, what does that mean to you after everything you'd been through at that point?
Oh, well, I watched our CO at that time was Tom Akins, a Texan, a real loud, wild man. And somehow he found a bottle of whiskey. I think he drank the whole damn thing and passed out. But that's how we felt, you know. Just, oh, you know, it's over. Mm-hmm. And there must have been 2,000-3,000 Germans and maybe 200-300 of us. And they kept bringing their guns, everything they had, and stacking it up. And we were supposed to, you know, get all this categorized, put them in spots. That was our job, was to, you know, take care of the surrendering.
And you told us that when you went over, when you were on the ship heading overseas, you were convinced you weren't coming back, that you would die somewhere along the way. When Germany finally surrendered, did you allow yourself to believe that, hey, I'm going to make it through all this?
Yeah, it was like, it's a miracle, you know, we're still alive, some of us. Amazing.
And how different was America when you came back?
Well, I'm still a kid. You know, we're not, I'm still only 21. It was kind of like a strange country again. In my case, fortunately, we had a home, the 5 acres, and we had a house and a half. My parents had given it to another family who were working the same kind of, what was his name?
This is back home in Los Angeles, you mean?
Yeah.
And they watched it for you?
Well, they took it over.
Uh-huh.
So I wasn't home. It was mid-July, I think, when my aunt and my parents came back from Colorado. The guy tried to kick them out. He said, you can't come here. It's my property. Get out of here. So my aunt, she must have had the papers of ownership. That's another story. She and her husband came here, I think, in 1899 or something like that. And they worked and they bought that 5 acres of property in their name. They're immigrants, and yet they bought it in their name because the anti-Japanese law was not in effect till 1908, something like that.
Uh-huh.
So the government could not escheat the property away from them, even though they were not American citizens.
Mm-hmm.
So she had the sheriff evict these people, and she got back into her home. So they were there. When I came home in December 1945, they were already in the home. So I had a home to come home to, mm-hmm. which most of the Japanese people did not. They had no place to go.
And there are those great stories of friends of the family, other families from town, watching the property and taking care of it while they were gone. But there's so many that lost everything. And I know you have that perspective.
Yeah.
And you say you get home and you go back to the family in Southern California, but I bet you wanted to track down that girl from Colorado, too.
They had come back to Gilroy.
Uh-huh.
Of course, they had recovered their property and were living there. So when I came back in December, I started driving up to Gilroy from L.A. and going back and forth. And eventually, in 1946, we got married.
1946.
Yeah.
70 years ago. What's your secret?
Well, I don't know. You just have to stay alive.
Well, you were pretty good at that during World War II. I've got to ask you, so much has been said now, and really since that time, about the 442nd. When you hear go for broke, what do those three words mean to you?
Well, I have a lot of memories of losing all of my paycheck on the crap table. It wasn't a table. It was a blanket on the hut floor. The Hawaiian boys are very good at rolling the dice. Mm-hmm. And we'd throw our money in there and boom, it's all gone. You go for broke. And of course, the boys would keep shooting until somebody got it all. Then they go hunt for another game to try to win everything there. Go for broke. All mm-hmm. or nothing.
Mm-hmm. And that really personified your unit militarily.
Yeah. Yeah, that was where the term came from.
Mm-hmm.
When the guys would eventually close shop or, you know, quit, they'd buckets of money, you know. Mm-hmm. But take everybody and go to town and, you know, eat, drink, whatever. Just spend all the money. And, of course, the Hawaiian boys always had money because the money orders keep coming.
Right.
So, and we're always broke. And the mainland boys had very little money. I forgot what we were getting, $21 or $30 or whatever we were getting. After you pay your laundry bill and so forth, maybe you've got 15 or 20 bucks left, and it doesn't take long before that's gone.
So, yeah.
You know, that we're not going anyplace, but the Hawaiian boys would drag you with them into town. Of course, they're always paying the bill. They're spending all their money.
Well, and to follow that parallel to the combat you were in against the Germans, you're one of those guys who got to walk away with a bucket of money. And there are a lot of those guys who had the money who aren't here anymore.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
When you think about all those guys from the 442nd and the other 400,000 Americans who died in World War II, what do you think people need to remember today?
Well, we've had a couple of generations since that have never had to go to war. And in 1941 and 2, the whole world was at war. We were either going to win or lose. And if we lost, we'd either be speaking German or Japanese today.
Mm-hmm.
It was, you know, you had to either win or lose. No question there.
What was it that you think enabled your side, our side, to win?
I don't know. The Germans had superior weapons. It beats the hell out of me how we defeated them. It's just, you know, sheer guts, I guess. You know, we made so many bonsai charges. It's just amazing. And, of course, I think a lot of the Germans were pretty demoralized by it. They knew, because they ever keep retreating, they knew that they were going to lose. And a lot of them thought, I'm going to surrender, because on many of the assaults, a lot of them would either wave a handkerchief or comrade, comrade. They're going like this, you know, and you can't shoot them at that point, you know. And they just gave up. A lot of them, they knew the end was near for them.
I don't want to forget to say thank you for serving our country, and thank you for helping us understand a little bit of what it was like for you and people like you. I do have a few more questions. You mentioned an event with one of those 211 men that you guys rescued in the Vosges Mountains, Al Tortolano. He's probably not the only Lost Battalion guy you've met.
There's very few left. There used to be three or four in this Northern California area, but I think he's the only one left anymore, and he's not very strong. So this might be the last time that we'll get together like this.
Maybe you were fortunate enough to catch Mr. Sakai and Mr. Tortolano appearing together, but if not, you can still get a little taste, because Al Tortolano shared his story on Hometown Heroes 5 years ago. And when we come back, we're going to get both veterans' accounts of how rescuer met rescuee, and we'll hear the gratitude of a man who knows he wouldn't be here without the courageous go-for-broke spirit of the 442nd. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this. Remember when the bank gave you free checking and savings accounts, even making money for you when you kept your dollars there? Paul Leffler here to say I've recaptured those days, and you can too with EECU. It's not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that just keeps growing and growing. The newest branch is in Tulare, and nearly 250,000 EECU members represent 10 different California counties. As little as $250 in a savings account earns you dividends. And access is so easy. 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And I haven't even told you what I love most about EECU, the credit union's support of causes up and down our area, like Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 500 World War II veterans have gotten to see their memorial in Washington, D.C. for free because of the leadership and financial support of EECU. Ready to join the team yet? Call 1-800-538-3328. With 8 locations in 5 states, there's probably a Paul Everett's RV Country within driving distance of this radio station. But really, it doesn't matter where you live, because Paul Everett has a fly and buy program that will fly you to any of his locations to buy your new RV.
It's one of those things that make doing business with Paul such a unique pleasure. Serving RVers for 55 years, you'll find Paul Everett's RV Country throughout the West and online at rvcountry.com.